The Fastest 15, it's brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. They allow us to bring this to you commercial free. Our number 10.
It's time for the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Yes, it is. A world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Fresh off the driving range last night. Nicole, you can hit the ball a little bit. I was impressed with you. Oh, we need Nicole's mic up.
Nicole's I'm here now.
I was impressed with you at the driving range.
Oh, well, thank you.
And even more impressed with our co-worker, Jeanette. My wife and I and a couple of my co-workers went to the driving range last night. And, yeah, Jeanette can, she can smack it out there a ways. I was very impressed.
Yeah, we were, this was something we're both new to. And especially during, she picked it up a little bit sooner than I did. But then during the shutdown, we were really upset that we weren't even better golf players because that was the only thing you could do in the beginning.
Right. Now, no, I had to get in here a few because I'm playing a little country club golf this weekend. But yeah, so I needed to just practice a little bit because my game's erratic when you only play twice a year. Erratic at best. And, oh man, I was erratic last night too. But I was all over the place. It's crazy. I used to be okay. I used to be able to shoot mid-80s. I'm not even close anymore. Practice does make perfect.
Well, it's one of those things you have to just keep up on. I mean, you can, you know, swing and hit a ball, but I'm sure it's one of those things you have to keep up with to really maintain your skills.
I mean, it wasn't just, I didn't just go to the driving range when I was a younger player. I would regularly, I had a shag bag and I'd stop at Jackson and I'd hit 100 chip shots from 50 to 100 yards. And I would putt for hours on end. And I built a golf driving cage in my mom's backyard, just 2x4s. And then I put up chicken wire on the 2x4s. And then I hung big old blankets and quilts on the back wall. And I would just pound ball after ball after ball into that cage. And back then, I could play a little bit. But now I just pick up clubs twice a year. It's very frustrating. It's a frustrating game when you don't play it on a semi-regular basis. But no, I was very impressed with you and Jeanette and my wife, for that matter.
I think I should do it more often. I think I should be there every week and getting better and better, right?
Well, I'm in. I got to start playing more. All right, let's get into the Fastest 15 here. It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. And I told you about Jay Inslee yesterday had the most ridiculous soundbite of the day. Now, you may remember back in January, a week or two before the Super Bowl, when he was telling all of us we could not have Super Bowl parties, and this was his eloquent way of explaining why.
We will not allow the virus to win the Super Bowl. We ought to win the Super Bowl, which means to keep people from being infected.
Okay. We are going to win the Super Bowl, not the virus. So over the weekend, Jay Inslee, in an amazingly tone-deaf performance, because there's nothing to celebrate. Businesses were destroyed. Thousands and thousands of businesses were destroyed. Thousands, maybe tens of thousands of jobs have been lost. 6,000 people died, and Jay Inslee was going around catching salmon, raising flags on the Space Needle, unfurling banners in Tacoma, like he was a superhero. And he talked about, I broke this soundbite down yesterday. If you were not listening yesterday, you simply have to hear this, because 6,000 people died from COVID. In our state, among them, most of them, the most vulnerable people in our state. And Jay Inslee has been making this amazingly stupid claim.
We have had such tremendous success in our state relative to other states. I don't see a reason for that. The calls we have made.
Oh, and he says, I don't see a reason for that. Brandy Cruz asked him, why don't you lift your executive powers, which were never designed to go for 17 months? Why? And he says, well, because we're doing so great with the power. He will not give up all of this power that was never designed to last for a year and a half in the hands of a governor.
We have had such tremendous success in our state relative to other states. I don't see a reason for that. The calls we have made have been very difficult, but they have succeeded. I'm not sure you want to go back and reform when you won the Super Bowl. And we've won the Super Bowl of this of the COVID pandemic. And the reason is we have saved tens of thousands of lives.
Okay, where did he get that number? That is a completely made-up number. We've saved tens of thousands of lives. The most vulnerable in the state died from coronavirus, and 6,000 people died. I don't know if there were 10,000 others whose lives were saved, which means 20,000. Tens of thousands means at least 20,000 lives were saved by Jay Inslee. And now we have some stats to just prove how insane that statement is. Todd Myers at the Washington Policy Center, he has a new piece posted today at washingtonpolicy.org. And the headline is, when stopping COVID mattered most, Washington state officials failed badly. Now understand, Jay Inslee is saying that he saved tens of thousands of lives by his executive superpowers. But what Todd Myers points out at Washington Policy is that the Inslee administration kept putting out goals to contain the spread of coronavirus. They missed pretty much every single one of those goals. They said that more testing was the key to limit the impact of COVID. But our testing rate went down 3 months into the pandemic. We tested fewer and fewer people when Jay Inslee said testing more is the key. When COVID cases spiked in November, the Department of Health, their own contact tracing program, absolutely collapsed, and they achieved less than 10% of the goal that they set. In other words, they missed it by 90% under Jay Inslee's lead. Washington ranked 41st. In vaccine rollouts, 40 states got the vaccines to its citizens faster and more efficiently than Washington did, which means that the most vulnerable were at risk the first 2 months that the vaccines were available. And then Jay Inslee, all he did was he kept saying, we're doing great. We're exceeding all of our goals. And he just kept repeating a lie after a lie after a lie. And similar to when he said he wouldn't raise taxes. And unfortunately, there were too many people in the media who just let him get away with those lies. He said that his horrible numbers were, quote, actually quite encouraging. Or when he was called on, remember when they were putting gunshot deaths down as COVID deaths? And he was asked about it. He said, well, you're from Pluto. He just said, numbers are wrong. They took stage 4 pancreatic cancer patients who had already been put in hospice and listed them as COVID deaths. And when that was exposed, your numbers are wrong. And so it was a pattern of failure and denial. And now Jay Inslee, my question is he aware of the failure and the denial? Has he truly convinced himself, and has he surrounded himself with people that actually have led him to believe that they saved tens of thousands of lives, more than 20,000 lives? Because you and I both know that that simply is not true.
The decisions we have made The decisions of business owners and families means that tens of thousands of people are alive today. I'm not sure I want to reform a system that won the Super Bowl. So I don't see a reason for that today. But listen, we're always open to ideas. And I'm sure there will be things we learn as we look back at the science of this. And I'm willing to obviously learn.
We won the Super Bowl. You didn't even make the wild card round, Mr. Governor. It's unbelievable. Tens of thousands of lives. I wish somebody would ask him, please explain exactly how you saved more than 20,000 lives with your actions. Please show us the data daddy, that proves that you saved more than 20,000 lives. He will not be able to produce any of it because everything in that soundbite was a lie, unfortunately. All right, next up in our Fastest 15, the President of the United States, Joe Biden, is back in the news. And I talked about this yesterday. We now have Russian hackers have sent out ransomware notices to more American businesses totaling over $70 million. In the last couple of months, they've brought down an East Coast pipeline. They've brought down a major food distributor, meat processing. And the Russians have flexed their muscle. We can take down your energy sector. We can take down your food distribution. We can take down America. And when they had that G7 conference, Joe Biden projected so much weakness that everybody in the world knows that America is weak and cannot respond to anything that other countries choose to do to us. So he was asked about this latest hack, and he tried to pull some notes out of his pocket because he had no idea what to say about the ransomware, the Russian ransomware demands. He had no idea what to say, but somebody had apparently scribbled down some notes for him, and he furiously fumbled to get notes out of his pocket so he could say something about America once again being held hostage.
Mr. President, on the latest ransomware attack, can you tell us if you believe that rises to the level of U.S. retaliation?
I can tell you a couple things. I received an update from my national security team this morning. It appears to have caused minimal damage to U.S. businesses, but we're still gathering information to the full extent of the attack, and I'm going to have more to say about this.
Okay, he's looking for the card. He's patting himself. He'll have more to say.
In the next several days, we're getting more detail and information. But that's what I can tell you now, and I feel good about our ability to...
He didn't know how to finish that. I feel good about our ability to, and they just faded off into the sunset there at an ice cream shop. That was an ice cream shop. He had pull out notes as well, just to answer a reporter's question.
Yeah. With the most recent hack by the Russians, would you say that this means
we're not
that...
sure it's the Russians?
Okay.
I got a brief. As I was on the plane, that's why I was late getting off the plane. I got a brief, and
all right. I'm looking for notes again.
Would you like your receipt?
Can you know who it might be, sir?
I'll be in better shape to talk to you about it.
Hang on a second. He just got briefed. And he has no clue what he's talking about. He has no clue what to say. He just got briefed on it. Hang on a second. I'll be in better shape to talk about it. How much better shape if you just got a brief?
I'll tell you what they sent me. Okay.
Finally found some notes, he thinks.
The idea, first of all, we're not sure who it is for certain, number one. And what I did, I directed the full resources of the government to assist in a response if we determine. What else you need?
Oh, nothing. You're all set.
Okay. And
so he's right in the middle of talking about Russian ransomware attackers attacking American businesses. And right in the middle, he faded off again, looks at the ice cream shop lady. What else do you need? This isn't funny anymore. This, not that it was ever funny, but this is a guy who clearly is not all there.
The fact is that I directed the intelligence community. You give me a deep dive on what's happened, and I'll know better tomorrow. And if it is, either with the knowledge of and or a consequence of Russia, then...
What? He sounds like Miss Teen South Carolina. Why can't teens find countries on a map?
I told Putin we will respond. And
you didn't tell him already, sir?
No, I haven't called because we're not certain. The initial thinking was it was not the Russian government, but we're not sure yet. So.
That's unbelievable. It's very, very frightening. It's very frightening. And this isn't a partisan thing. Everybody can hear it. Democrats and Republicans, liberals, conservatives, other world leaders. Everybody can hear that we have somebody in charge who is clearly not all there. And you can, even if you want to support him, and I know there are a lot of people who are hopeful that Joe Biden would be a decent president, but even the people who want to support, I know you can hear it as well. And this is not good for America. So then one other thing, the Haitian president was assassinated earlier today. Can he at least muster up something to say about that?
What's your reaction, Mr. President, to the Haitian president being assassinated?
You need a lot more information, but it's very worrisome about the state of Haiti.
The U.S. have a role in keeping...
That's it, and then he got on the plane. It's worrisome that another head of state has been assassinated. That's what we got at the top right now, and these are indeed very, very frightening times. And that is your Fastest 15 for today.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast, Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. And coming up next, it's Wednesday afternoon, and that means it's time for Brock Huard's weekly visit. So we'll chat with Brock next here on the Dory Monson Show.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's Hump Day with Huard.
Blue in it, check. Brown, 24, Razor. Hut.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Where the 12s hear the Hawks.
Play fake to Penny Russell, lets it go. Down the far sideline. Reaching up, making the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Here's Dory Monson.
Well, it is Wednesday afternoon, and that's when our good friend Brock Huard drops by for a weekly visit. And what I like about these, I like everything about your visits, Brock, but more than anything, I never know where you're going to be calling in from. You're in a different state every single week that we talk.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah.
I used to love that game. Yes, I am in beautiful, muggy Des Moines, Iowa. If we get a chance to speak with you today, and
yeah.
Titus yelling in the background, we're watching Macy play in a big AAU tournament. These are kind of a couple big weeks here for my middle Macy because
right. The
college coaches are out on the road all watching these big tournaments. So, yeah, that's where you find me today, buddy. Middle America, Des Moines, Iowa.
These are the big viewing tournaments where all the players, they have to sit through all kinds of NCAA protocol lessons, and it's the first time that they really get to start focusing in. If you want to play college ball, there are going to be a lot of rules and a lot of regulations that you got to abide by over the next couple of years.
Yeah, there are. And this is also a chance for, you know, like Gino Auriemma was at the game today because Macy's team played a team from the South that had just a couple phenomenal athletes. And, you know, I think that's also what these tournaments do, Dory, is they expose you. You know, you can sometimes get in your little circle, your little community, your little state, and, you know, you can kind of get a feel for the competition level. And and then when you spread your wings a little bit, you got teams from Miami, you got teams from Georgia, Texas, California. It also is just, it's really, it's both humbling at times, but it's an incredibly competitive environment. And then, you know, as a guy like you that loves women's basketball, you see, you know, Deuce Staley, and you see Gino Auriemma, and you see, you know, the best coaches in America that are scouring this country for talent as well.
Yeah. And it's really amazing to me that those coaches, you know, Gino Auriemma has one of the best coaching records in any sport in history, and that they still got to scramble every single year because there are wolves nipping at their heels who want to try to take down the big dogs at UConn, the big Huskies, and if you let up for 1 second, and that's where the pressure of college basketball, it just seems to be relentless, because if you let down for even a minute, then somebody else is going to fill that void.
Yes, and it's also, you would think you'd get to Gino Auriemma's level, and you're like, well, are you really recruiting? I mean, you're just kind of picking and handpicking, you know, the elite of the elite. But yet he, Dory, sits in those bleachers and wants to watch these kids interact. It's not just their measurables. It's not just their jumping ability. It's not just their shooting ability, right? I mean, and you hear this from Gino. It's, I think, why you love him. And we've talked about him a bunch on these Wednesdays over the years. Is it's your body language, it's your effort, it's your unselfishness. It's all those things that you need to see in person. And for the last, you know, 15 months or so, recruiting was so shut down. And these coaches were not on the road. They're not meeting players. They're not getting a chance to meet family and just kind of watch the whole interaction, because you're getting a whole package. You're not just getting, you know, that individual's height and weight and shooting ability. You're getting the whole personality. You're getting the family. And yeah, so it's a cool learning lesson for, I think, so many to kind of broaden your horizon and get out there and compete. It's pretty cool.
Now, I mentioned something last week and I kind of gave it short shrift because it was right at the end of the segment. But I talked about how you and another parent, and it wasn't you, it was just another parent, decided to start yapping at you during a game. What I didn't mention was that the guy realized, you told me, that he was in the wrong. He came up and as a stranger, hugged you and said, I'm sorry. Is that right?
Well, it was about a week later. We played the same team again. And yes, it was pretty neat. You know, that we got to come together, and I was kind of curious. I was hopeful that it would. I really was, because, you know, you kind of get in those competitive environments and you get a little feisty, and I wasn't even yapping, but he didn't like the looks on my faces or my face. And so he confronted me, and the heart was beating a little bit. Adrenaline was pumping. And then 4 or 5 days later, we did circle back and hug it out. Now, I will say this, Dory. I did have this is the first in my life. My youngest, Titus, had a baseball tournament over the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. We're out on the baseball fields, and it wasn't our game. It was a game behind us, huge ruckus, parents screaming and yelling. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what now? Umpire on the field calls 911.
Oh, man.
Those umpire on the field calls 911, calls the game. Cops come to the baseball park. Parents are like climbing the fence. I mean, it was just, whew, you know, as one that's watched a lot of youth sports now for the last 15 years of my life, I've seen that continue to devolve.
Oh, yeah.
And man, it was, I'm not going to say it was scary, but you do see where incidents and full-out brawls and at times even gunfire and other things erupt. And that umpire, fearing for his safety, calls 911 from the baseball diamond.
Well, and no matter how it's resolved, it's horrifying for the kids. And now the sport becomes a torture chamber rather than a place of joy. Did you see what happened at that California high school sectional game last week?
No.
So it was the championship game, and I think sectionals is as far as you go. It's such a big state, you don't do state championships. And so it was essentially the highest level championship game, two boys basketball teams. The team that won, very hard fought game, they won by 3 points. The other team was primarily Hispanic, and somebody in the stands on the winning team side started passing out tortillas to the players after the game, and the tortillas start flying, and they started flinging them toward the primarily Hispanic team. And they just decided a few days ago that the team that was doing the tortilla flinging, that they were going to lose their title. And that brought up a big controversy. Well, if it was after the game was over, they had won the championship, and only a couple of the kids did this, and maybe some idiots in the stands, but should all the kids be punished for that? And you know, I thought, I'll toss that out to you, because they said, no, we have to send a message so this never happens again.
Yeah, I don't think that accomplishes a lot. It's the same thing with, like, Reggie Bush, who's fighting to get his Heisman Trophy back, and he actually lost the hardware. He was the USC player a decade and a half ago for Pete Carroll that was doing all sorts of illegal, you know, financial activities in his family and everything else. And Reggie's saying, hey, with these new rules in college, give me my stats back. Give me my wins back. Give me my Heisman back. And I think any of that stuff retroactively after it happens, I think carries such little weight. Those teams and those schools and those players on the losing side even, like, if I'm on the losing side, do all of a sudden I want a championship or think I won that championship because of knuckleheads and idiotic behavior, as foolish as it is, as racist and stupid as it is? If I'm on that losing team, I'm not putting a banner up in my gym, or I'm not getting rings that, oh, yeah, we won because these knuckleheads had horrible sportsmanship and worse behavior. So that doesn't really fly in my camp, Mr. Monson.
Yeah, I know. But it just illustrates everything we've been talking about, that things are going to keep getting worse before they get better. And I don't know what it's going to take to turn this ship around with youth sports.
Well, I just, and you said it best right there, is the ones that are truly harmed are the kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, are the ones that just want to play, you know, that if you just, and I think it's Cal Ripken back in Baltimore a few years ago that built a league that basically has no fans, no parents, no parents allowed. You drop your kids off and the kids are going to play, and we're just going to let them play, and we're just tired of this interaction. You know, there is an enormous shortage. I just got an email this morning from a friend of mine that runs a baseball club in Everett. And there is a huge shortage of umpires and referees.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, that's the other little, like, unintended consequences. Who wants to referee an umpire a game where I got to call 911
because
your parents are Looney Tunes? So,
yeah,
all sorts of effects, Dory, and not many of them very positive.
No, that's for dang sure. All right. Well, you keep being a good role model for your kids. And let me know how the tourney goes.
I will. I will keep you up to date. And yeah, next Wednesday, I think I'm going to be in Dallas for Big 12 Media Day. So maybe every Wednesday this summer, you will hear from me in a little different locale.
50 and 50. I want you to do 50 hump day with Ewards from 50 different states.
Where in the world is Brock Ewart today with Dory? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. All right, that is Brock Ewart. Thanks for popping on. I appreciate it.
All right. See you, bud.
We have lots more to come. It's the Dory Monson Show.
Yeah, that was a pretty dumb little whiner. So I'll just do my normal rolls on, rolls on, rolls on, rolls on, rolls on.
As you know, the Dory Monson Show is the least racist media outlet in the entire Pacific Northwest, maybe in the world, because I don't tolerate any of that nonsense, which is why this is really hard for me. Why, starting today, after a lifetime of being absolutely fascinated by numbers, maybe in some ways even a bit of a number savant, this is hard. I'm giving it all up. Giving it all up. No more numbers for Big Daddy here, because math is super, super racist. And I know that because I have in front of me a Twitter thread from teachers all around the country. Not just teachers, but educators. What's the difference between a teacher and an educator? I thought all teachers were educators. Not all educators are teachers. But anyway, there's some teachers, educators, and professors out there who are teaching children right now that math is racist. And I'll give you an example from this one thread that says 2 plus 2 equals 5. And let me start with Princess Choo Choo, who says she's a teacher. In reality, people who realize that both 2 plus 2 equals 4 and 2 plus 2 equals 5 can be true in different contexts. They're actually far harder to convince of falsehoods because they know to look a little harder at obvious truths like 2 plus 2 equals 4. So in other words, if you just say 2 plus 2 equals 4, you're just brainwashed, ignorant, and yes, a racist. I hate racists. Another person, Brittany Marshall, a teacher, says, nope, the idea of 2 plus 2 equaling 4 is cultural. And because of Western imperialism and colonization. I'm going to put a little colonization under my neck here. Colonization. Hey, you know what my problem is? I should get my woke word dice out for this. Okay, here, now I can get it. Nope, the idea of 2 plus 2 equaling 4 is cultural. And because of Western imperialism and colonialism, we think of 2 plus 2 equals 4 as the only way of knowing. You want more proof of how racist you are if you think 2 plus 2 equals 4? By the way, if your child ever asks you, what is 2 plus 2 equal? Please don't reveal yourself to be such a virulent racist person. Another teacher writes, the amount of people losing their bleep, and what I bleeped was the S word. Teachers shouldn't talk like that. The amount of people losing their bleep over a mathematician saying there are instances where 2 plus 2 equals 5 is why you will never be able to convince transphobes to stop oppressing trans people. How did we get from 2 plus 2 equals 5 to that? But it doesn't matter, because not only am I the most least racist, yeah, it's like my cologne that I'm wearing. Not only am I the most least racist media outlet in the Pacific Northwest, but I'm also the most least transphobic, too. But not according to these teachers here. A situation in which people might find it useful to say that 2 plus 2 equals 5, namely the following. Suppose you are an event organizer and the event splits up naturally into short presentations with breaks between them. Maybe you'd get into the habit of talking about sessions in terms of number of breaks. So a two-break session would consist of three presentations, separated by two breaks. A two-break session followed by a two-break session would then be a five-break session. And it might be convenient to abbreviate that to 2 plus 2 equals 5. All right, so I just like to help out. I would like everybody to reach the same level of enlightenment that I have. I would like everybody to please stop looking at math as anything but a horribly racist construct of the man. Okay, let me take a quick time out here. We'll check the news for you here at the top of the hour, and then the big lead at 2 is coming up next.